Today, one woman's story of motherhood after miscarriage. And just a warning before we start, there are descriptions in this episode which some listeners might find distressing. Jenny Ag is a freelance health journalist, and 5 years ago, she had a miscarriage.
So I very clearly remember a sort of moment of it dawned on me how irrevocable it was, if that's what was going to happen. I'd started bleeding and done the inevitable thing, which is to Google, you know, bleeding in early pregnancy, and lots of results come up that say miscarriage, threatened miscarriage, and, you know, you sort of read lots of things, lots of articles one after the other, and I just remember reading a sentence somewhere that sort of said, once a miscarriage has started, it can't be prevented, which is probably what I would have thought before if somebody had asked me in a sort of objective, unemotional, detached way. I would have assumed that was the case. But when it happens to you, it feels like that shouldn't be the case. You think, kind of felt like there must be something they can do, or a pill they can give me. But there isn't.
That was the first time Jenny suffered a miscarriage, but tragically, it wasn't her last. She went on to have three more over the next 2 years. During that time, she set out to understand why this was happening to her and found that despite an estimated 1 in 5 pregnancies ending in miscarriage, relatively little is known about why.
I remember finding that quite a surprise, how common doctors and midwives know it to be. It just seemed like a remote possibility, really, which actually I now know is far from the case.
More high-profile women, including the Prime Minister's wife, Carrie Johnson, are now speaking out about their own miscarriages. This is a story about Jenny's journey, what she learned, and what it means to finally become a mother. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, changing the conversation around miscarriage.
You first got pregnant in 2017. What were your hopes and, I suppose, fears for pregnancy?
Yeah, I really enjoyed being pregnant that first time. It felt like our lives were going to change in a really wonderful way. And, you know, we had close friends who were also expecting a baby around the same time. You know, children would have been the same school year, sort of little things like that. So it was, I just remember it being a very happy, kind of blissful time, really.
When was it during that pregnancy that you noticed something wasn't quite right?
I first noticed something wasn't right around 6 weeks, in that I had some very slight bleeding then, but it was put down to, I had an early scan and there was a heartbeat and they couldn't see any sign of any issue. And then the bleeding stopped after a couple of days. So it was kind of put down to just one of those things. It happens sometimes. Slightly alarmingly, they send you away with a leaflet that says threatened miscarriage. But the midwife sort of said, oh, you know, but that's just what we call it. But, you know, there's no need to worry. We were told sort of various statistics about how actually once you see a heartbeat on a scan, the chance of miscarriage drops drastically. So we were really reassured by that. And then it was almost 6 weeks later, it was just before our 12-week scan, that I started bleeding again. And that was quite different. That was, it happened very quickly. I'd not really noticed any issue at all. And then within 24 hours, I had lost the baby.
Are you able to talk about what it feels like to miscarry, like how it makes you feel physically and also emotionally?
Yeah, I think I can. I mean, the first time for me was the most physically traumatic, I think is the word, without wanting to kind of overstate anything. I think there's this idea still that a miscarriage is just a heavy period. And in my case, that first time, that was very far from the case. For the first sort of 12 hours or so, it was a little bit like the bleeding had been before. So kind of very light. And I think we basically assumed or hoped it would be like before, that, you know, we were going to go and have a scan and actually it would all be fine. It would just be a little bit of bleeding. And then it quickly became apparent that that wasn't the case. And I sort of woke up feeling the sheets kind of flood. And then I got up to go to the bathroom. And it was then, as I moved to go to the bathroom, that I could feel something fall away. In that moment, that was, for both me and for my partner, that was for Dan, my husband, that was very frightening, because you have no idea whether that's a normal thing, given that possibly what we'd heard about miscarriage before was this, you know, just a heavy period thing. It was like, oh, well, what's going on here then? Is this, okay, we probably know this is a miscarriage by now, but is this also, you know, am I in danger here? It sounds strange looking back that I, even in that moment when I was kind of thinking, this is probably it, I was still had that hope in my mind that somehow our baby was still hanging on in there.
You've sadly gone through this four times, which is kind of unimaginable on its own, a horrific experience, but more than that, unbelievably awful. Can you talk about the period after miscarrying? I'm sure it's different every time, but how you've experienced that time after?
Yeah, I think I don't really remember very much from the sort of immediate weeks, days and weeks kind of after each miscarriage, particularly that first one. But I do remember thinking that sort of every opportunity, a sort of hope would kind of flicker up that someone was going to tell me that I was still pregnant, you know, the doctor would phone, or I'd get a letter from, must have had an NHS stamped letter arrive, and I thought, right, that's it, it's going to say there's been a mistake, you're still pregnant. Or my husband would say, oh, guess what happened today, I've got some good news. And I think, oh, he's going to tell me I'm still pregnant. It's like, and even as I was thinking it, I think that's insane. How could he know that? But it doesn't, I guess it's just because that's what you want, and that's what you feel by rights you should be. You know, you can quite clearly picture that pregnancy continuing on a kind of alternate timeline. Yeah, but I think it does do slightly illogical things to your brain.
What did people say to you? You know, people you know?
Generally, people were very kind. But I think there was that awkwardness of not wanting to bring it up. And I think this is, I don't think this is miscarriage specific. I think it's something with all kinds of bereavement. I think there's that fear of, oh, if I mention that person, if I mention that loss, that you'll make people feel worse, you'll remind them of it. But actually, you're thinking about it all the time anyway. But I hadn't really told very many people at all until I wrote about it for a newspaper. So then, of course, everybody knew, which is one way to go with telling people.
Just go big, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, in many ways, that made it easier. For a start, I had an awful lot of people from all kind of different parts of my life telling me their own experiences, which was helpful. In that you kind of see the evidence of what you've perhaps been told very briefly by a doctor or a sonographer, that actually this is really common.
when you were going through this time, you know, where did you initially go to for support? You know, what help is out there for women that go through this, and so many women go through this?
So it evolved over time for me, where I went and what was helpful. In the first instance, I went to the Miscarriage Association, which is a UK charity. And that was quite practical stuff at that point. That was, you know, when you can try again to get pregnant, and perhaps kind of how to approach a discussion with your employer and time off, how much time off you might need, you know, things like that. And that was a brilliant resource. And I think, if I'm completely honest, that first time, the information I was seeking out was very much to do with getting pregnant again as quickly as possible. And, you know, I mean, maybe a little bit of how do I prevent this from happening again, but also all the kind of messaging after a single miscarriage is that kind of this is a random event, it won't happen again. You know, it's kind of not really open for discussion at that point, that there might be something more going on.
Did you feel each time it happened, you entered into this sort of new category, as it were? You know, you were ended up needing different support, and you were looking for different advice.
Yeah, I think so. I think once I got pregnant again quite quickly after the first, and I think then it was like, right, you know, I was quite blinkered in that we were pregnant again. We've been told it shouldn't happen again. I was still very nervous. We'd asked for an early scan this time. I'm not quite sure what I thought that was going to do, really. But I think there was sort of, you know, some reassurance, I suppose. And then when that happened again, that second miscarriage is a strange one because, A, it flies in the face of what you've been told. And, you know, what you're told about the odds of having another miscarriage. And also, by that point, you kind of read a little bit about there's no kind of testing until you have a third miscarriage. So then it's that strange thing of, am I going to have to have another miscarriage before they'll do anything?
So you have to have three miscarriages before they will carry out any test to find out why you're miscarrying. What did those tests tell you?
They told us that there was nothing obvious or nothing discernible that was causing them, which was that was a kind of its own particular kind of disappointment, really. I think it's not that you kind of want to be told that you have a health problem, and obviously some of the reasons that they can find can be quite difficult to treat. So, you know, it's not that you're wishing for that, but I think it does feel very difficult to be told that they don't know what's going on, because I think it's quite hard to believe at that point that it is just random.
You were referred to a recurrent miscarriage clinic to try and get some answers, which I'm sure is what you wanted by this point. This all must have been so incredibly frustrating. And I imagine that a lack of answers leads you to feel like this is happening because there is something wrong with you. Is that kind of what goes through your mind?
Yeah, it is. And it's, I think it's that fear of, not only is there something wrong with me, it's something they don't know how to test for yet, or that they, you know, there's something going on that they don't, that medically they don't understand. And that's horrible and frightening. And it also does the other thing, which is that it's not, you know, if you can go the other way and you think, well, okay, it's not, the experts have looked at our case and my blood test results, and therefore it must be something I'm doing, rather than it's not sort of inherent to my biology. It's, oh, well, my job is too stressful, or I'm not taking the right prenatal vitamins, or whatever it is, I drink too much coffee. And you can kind of very quickly drive yourself a bit mad with that kind of train of thought.
I was about to say, I mean, there's so much information online on social media about how you can be doing all this better, looking after yourself better, pregnancy wellness. Like it must get quite overwhelming when you're
It's hugely overwhelming. And it's, I think it leaves you, because there's this information gap, essentially. Even if you've done, you know, all your kind of, all the things you're supposed to do, and you've seen doctors and you've had lots of tests, ultimately, if people can't tell you anything, I think that leaves you quite vulnerable to wanting to find it. You want to find answers, and you kind of reach a point where you're like, well, you know, anything's got to be worth a try kind of mindset, I think.
There's a line in an article you wrote for The Guardian last year, which has really stuck with me, where you write, "We'd put a man on the moon before we could routinely see in real time what was happening inside a woman's womb." You write that the measurements of early pregnancy actually weren't established until ultrasound imaging emerged in the early 70s. We obviously know a lot more about having a baby now, but we know less about why we might lose one. What do we understand? And through your research and speaking to people who work in the field, what do we understand about why a miscarriage happens?
So I think the thing that opened up my understanding was this idea that some miscarriages are down to seemingly random chromosomal errors, genetic errors, and some are not. I think about a 50-50 split. That's what I learned through talking to various people working in this field in pregnancy loss research. And it's kind of, it's those chromosomally healthy embryos that are lost, that are miscarried, that's where there might be something else going on. And there's quite a breadth of what that might be. The most common thing, and the thing that's kind of tested, so at least in my NHS clinic, what they focus on is blood clotting disorders.
Yeah, on the NHS, what treatments are available, and did you have any of them?
For us, initially, the answer was there isn't anything we can offer you as a treatment. We saw a consultant after our third miscarriage, or about 6 months after, by the time the appointments came along, and the verdict was, there doesn't seem to be a reason. So the best advice is to try again and to keep trying. I mean, they didn't say it's a numbers game, really. So I don't think they actually said that, but that was the sort of very clear implication. And they sort of tried to reassure you with statistics about how, you know, the majority of people who have recurrent miscarriages for whom no reason is found, they do try and reassure you that, you know, the vast majority still do go on to have a baby. But it's very difficult to really believe that and to kind of think, you know, I've got to get pregnant again, and you're telling me there's nothing different I can try. But then in between my fourth miscarriage and my fifth pregnancy, a fairly large trial was published that found pretty compelling evidence that taking progesterone could help in people who have started bleeding in early pregnancy, and in particular in women who have had multiple pregnancy losses. That was where the evidence seemed to be strongest. So having read about that, when I was pregnant again, I basically asked them about it and said, you know, it wasn't a perfect fit for our case. I wasn't bleeding again in that particular pregnancy, but I just thought it just had to be worth a try.
We'll come back to that treatment, but one thing I keep thinking about is what it must be like
to get pregnant after a miscarriage. How does it feel to embark on that again after so much loss?
So in the first instance, it's quite businesslike. If I compare that fifth time to the first time, you don't take a pregnancy test and think, oh, I'm going to have a baby. You just think, well, I've taken this a positive pregnancy test. Let's see how far we get this time. All that sort of hope and kind of imagined future and all those sort of other things that a positive pregnancy test, if you want to have a baby, is imbued with, it's just not there by the time you're doing this for a fifth time after four miscarriages.
At 8 weeks into that pregnancy, you started bleeding. What did you do? You know, what was going through your mind at that time?
Yes, you're right. It was 8 weeks in. We'd had our first appointment at the recurrent miscarriage clinic the week before, and I just started, where I'd asked for the progesterone, I just started, so I'd been taking it for a week, I think that's right. And then I started bleeding, and it was 8 weeks is exactly where the previous three miscarriages had happened, and the bleeding was almost identical to the second time. Me and Dan, we were both completely convinced, really, I think, that it was a fifth miscarriage.
And what happened at that scan? Do you remember it very clearly?
All that week, really, and then definitely on the morning. I just very clearly remember thinking, you know, this is potentially what's known as a missed miscarriage. When am I going to schedule the surgery to remove the fetus? And then it's quite a long wait at the clinic. You're just sort of sat in a corridor waiting. And I very clearly remember my mum talking to me about the roadworks on the A14 and how this was affecting how she could get to swimming and various other things. I mean, I know why she was doing it. She was just kind of just doing her best, I think, to just try and keep me from thinking about what might be about to happen. And then we all went into the sort of scanning room, the same room we'd been in quite a few times before by this point. And I was just, I'd almost started hearing the conversation really before anything had happened. I could hear them kind of telling me, you know, as we've been told so many times before, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. I could hear it so clearly. So that it was, I almost couldn't compute when the sonographer was kind of showing us the screen, and there was a very obvious, very clear, moving heartbeat. And that, I think, was probably the first point. Maybe I thought, perhaps this will be different.
I'm sure that was such an enormous moment for you and for your husband Dan and your mum, and it was also a moment that meant 3 weeks later you got to do something you hadn't before, which was go for your 12-week scan, where you saw your baby for the first time. That must have been incredible.
It was incredible. It was incredible. Yeah, seeing that movement and that sort of so familiar outline of a baby at that point, the kind of 12-week, you can see the outline of the head and the hands. It's so kind of instantly recognisable, and yet it never happened for us before. We'd only kind of seen, well, either screens had been kind of turned away from us, or there was no movement. And the thing for us is that we had that picture. We'd got to a point where they offered to print the scan images for you. We'd never had that before. And we left with it clutched in my hand. And it's still, that first one, actually, that's the picture. I've still got it pinned above my desk.
Are you looking at it now?
I am looking at it now. Yeah.
Aww.
I am. I may never know whether it was the progesterone. What I do know is that that pregnancy was successful and I had my son.
Coming up, Jenny on motherhood after miscarriage and what she thinks is still missing in our conversations about it. Jenny, you move through the next weeks and months of pregnancy, which incidentally coincided with the first lockdown. And last summer, as restrictions were easing, you gave birth to a boy. How does it feel to become a mother after miscarrying so many times?
I mean, you could do a whole episode on that. It's everything that I hoped it would be. I think that's the important first important thing to say, is that he is wonderful, but it's not uncomplicated. Some things are a kind of instant relief, or at least that's how I felt anyway. There was a huge relief that it was no longer kind of just down to me and my body. The information you get and guidance with a newborn compared to when you're pregnant, and the sort of what you can know and see objectively in front of you, I found that an enormous relief.
If there is someone listening now who perhaps has suffered a miscarriage, what would your advice be to them? What would you say to them based on your own experiences?
I mean, first of all, I would say how sorry I am, and that just because, you know, you might know other people who've been through it, or lots of people or more people are talking about it now, that doesn't make it any easier. That doesn't mean it's not a big deal, for want of a better word. Throughout the kind of whole process, that was, I think, the thing I struggled with the most, was how much I was, quote unquote, allowed to feel the way I felt.
What is this experience of talking about it and the responses you've got from people? What has it said to you about what maybe needs to change in the way that we as a society approach miscarriage?
I think the key thing is that we need to take it seriously in terms of the medical care on offer, and that includes psychological support. I think it needs to be properly counted in maternity data, which at the moment it isn't. It needs to be properly researched. I think there are, you know, still big questions around early pregnancy and what actually happens and why things happen. We need to take it seriously in a sense that as an experience, it's not undone by going on to have a family, to bring home a baby. I think that is quite a persistent idea, that somehow you forget what's happened before. At least that's not how I feel anyway. And I think that's true for lots of people.
Jenny, thank you so much for speaking to me.
Oh, no, thank you for having me.
That was Jenny Ag. I really recommend reading an article she wrote for us last year called My Four Miscarriages: Why Is Losing a Pregnancy So Shrouded in Mystery? It's brilliantly written, and you can find it at theguardian.com. If you've been affected by anything we've talked about in this episode, or would like to understand more about miscarriage, the Miscarriage Association has a very helpful website, miscarriageassociation.org.uk. They also have a pregnancy loss helpline. You can call them between 9 and 4, Monday to Friday, on 01924 200 07-7799. That's it for today. Thank you to Jenny for speaking to me. This episode was produced by Alex Atack and sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Blant. We'll be back tomorrow.